Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to another special Between Takes episode of Missing Frames, Sundance 2020 edition. I'm your host, Sean Eastridge. We're hanging out over here on thenerdparty.com with all kinds of great podcasts like Filibuster, A24 Project, Aggressive Negotiations, Babel for 5, SETI Alpha 3. There's so many great things to check out. I encourage you to do so at thenerdparty.com. Make sure you're following us on Twitter at @JoinNerdParty, like the Facebook page, The Nerd Party, and follow us on Instagram at The Nerd Party. We've got all the social media bases covered. So today we're talking with writer-director Levin Achten about his new film, And Then We Danced, which is opening in New York City this weekend and then in LA on Valentine's Day weekend. The timing couldn't be more perfect. So, And Then We Danced, I'm reading this from the website, so I'm going to try to make it sound as if I'm spontaneously saying it. I guess I've defeated the purpose by telling you, but And Then We Danced is a passionate tale of love and liberation set amidst the conservative confines of modern Georgian society. Not Atlanta, Georgia. This is the country, Georgia. Get with it, people. It follows Marab, a devoted dancer who has been training for years with his partner Mary for a spot in the National Georgian Ensemble. The arrival of another male dancer, Irakli, gifted with perfect form and equipped with a rebellious streak, throws Marab off balance, sparking both an intense rivalry and romantic desire that may cause him to risk his future in dance, as well as his relationships with Mary and his family. So, And Then We Danced might have been my favorite film that I saw at Sundance. It's definitely in the conversation for being my favorite film at Sundance. I absolutely loved it, and I loved getting a chance to chat with Levin about it. So we discussed the film's production, the controversy surrounding the filming in the country of Georgia. Like, there's a strong right-wing homophobic movement there, despite the fact that LGBTQ people have the same rights as anyone else. It's not necessarily enforced the way it should be. But we discuss the film's triumphs. We discuss how, despite the tragic underpinnings, it's a movie filled with joy. I had such a great time. I hope you enjoy listening. Let's get right to it.
Now available to own on video cassette.
Well, Levin, thank you so much for chatting, and congratulations. I want to say, first and foremost, I saw this at Sundance. I saw the film.
Wow.
Yeah, and I think this might have been my favorite film that I saw there.
Wow, thank you so much.
Thank you. I want you to know how much I loved it, because I'm not an ABBA fan, and you made me an ABBA fan. Like, I don't know how you did it.
Why don't you like ABBA?
I don't know. They're just not my style, but the way you used it in the movie, you made me love them.
Oh, I'm so happy. I mean, I think ABBA, there's something nostalgic about them.
Yeah.
Maybe because I'm from Sweden. I was born and raised in Sweden. But yeah, I think they're romantic.
I think they are too. And you use them in a perfectly romantic scene in the film.
Yeah.
But tell me, how long did it take you to write this script? Like, when did you start thinking about the ideas for And Then We Danced? And
it was very much an organic process. I didn't work like I usually have before with this film, because so the genesis of the idea came back in 2013 when 50 people in Tbilisi, Georgia tried to have Georgia's first pride parade, and they were attacked by 20,000 counter protesters who, I know, it was crazy, organized by the Georgian Orthodox Church and other far-right groups, and they were really like riled up. And fortunately, the pride people could take refuge in a bus, but 12 people were injured. And this was like on the news everywhere. Since I have Georgian heritage, you know, I think it spoke extra to me. And I very much felt like, you know, how is this possible? What's going on in Georgia? And so, but I couldn't go to Georgia then, because I wanted to do something like right away. But then I was making another film in Sweden. So as soon as I'd finished that, so in the spring of 2016, I went to Georgia with like my own little camera just to do research on the topic. And I had no idea that it would turn out to be And Then We Danced. And that was actually the case quite long. I mean, I never was like, okay, I'm going to make a movie about a dancer who falls in love. Like, I never had that. It just sort of organically grew through these interviews I made. And then I understood that, you know, Georgian representation of how traditional Georgian society is. And it's also cinematic representation. So that, like, grew out of that necessity. So it was never really like, I want to tell this story because this story, you know, has to be in this and that way. It was more like, I want to tell a story about tradition and how, you know, you can find your own place in a traditional society, even though it doesn't accept you. And I never set out to make a love story either. That was also just, you know, in the process where I was like, okay, I want him to, you know, have this journey of self-actualization. How can he do that? Okay, he falls in love, and that makes him understand that it's okay to be who you are in this environment. So that's how the film grew.
Yeah, I love that. I love, he's a dancer. The character is a dancer. It's Marab, correct?
Yeah, Marab.
So
yeah.
Marab is a dancer, and specifically, he is doing the traditional Georgian dance, which is a very masculine dance. Exactly. And I love the way that you use that as a representation of his self-discovery and finding that way, finding his own version of masculinity.
I know. I think that's something that, you know, I think about a lot and have thought about a lot. And also, you know, just the notion that other people try to pigeonhole you in a way where it's like you have to be in this and that way in order to be considered, you know, like Georgian or Swedish or American, and you have to, you know, fit this mold and you have to tick these boxes, and I want to say, like, no, you can, you know, you can choose to interpret your tradition, your culture, and love it and cherish it in any way that you want. And the film is a very, I mean, it's really like a love letter to Georgian old tradition and cultures and everything. But what I also want to put out there is that, you know, you can really interpret it the way that fits you.
Yeah. And I was reading this interview you did with GQ recently, just in terms of during the shoot, just how crazy it got in terms of just trying to shoot with the political climate over there. I didn't know. I watched the movie first. And then as I was going to learn more about its production, learning about just the issues of LGBTQ rights in Georgia and learning about that. Talk a little bit about some of the difficulties your production faced.
First of all, I just want to say that Georgia is on paper the most progressive country in that region, because it is legal to be LGBTQ and they're protected under like minority law since the year 2000. However, it's not implemented, neither politically or you know, in the social fabric of society, because I think the government in Georgia want to move toward West and the EU, but at the same time there's lots of Russian influences and the church is really strong, so they don't really get the protection that they, by law, should have. Like, for instance, when they're trying to hold a pride parade, they tried to have one last summer. The government's like, oh, but you can't have it because we can't protect you. Mm-hmm. And they're like, yeah, but you have to protect us against these bigots, you know. And some people even think that, you know, these crazy groups are supported by the government also in many ways. It's very, like, murky, everything. And also just in society, you know, there's never been any representation of gay people in anything, and you know, if you're gay, you can't be openly gay, like get a job or even go to the university, you know. Which you should, I mean, legally you should be able to, but you get ostracized by society. So this film was really also for me a way to, you know, change minds and like show people that, you know, look, there are gay people and they're not, you know, these monsters. And because I think a lot of people in countries like Georgia and other former Eastern European countries, and like in many places around the world, are homophobic by default because they've never met a gay person.
Yeah.
Like they, you know, they don't know what it is. So in that way, this movie has really, you know, we tried to have a premiere in Georgia in November. We could have 3 days, which was good. We wanted to show the movie more, but there were so many riots outside and police and weapon detectors and everything. It was insane. There's a great New York Times article by Carmen Gray about, I mean, there are many articles, but that one is really like, you can read about it. It was very intense.
I'll have to check that one out.
Yeah, check it out. But the thing was that at the end of the day, you know, those 3 days, I think 6,000 people saw it, like the tickets sold out within minutes.
Oh, wow.
And there was so much, and there was so much support for the film.
Oh, good.
And so many people who, you know, like older people. I had like friends write me that they'd taken their grandmothers and grandfathers and loved it and cried throughout the movie. And they really, like, you know, something has changed. And I think that this summer they're going to be able to have a Pride Parade, hopefully, under protection. So the movie sort of forced the hand of the people in charge to, you know, stand up and be like, okay, fine, we're going to protect this movie. And because it has been so successful,
I love that.
They couldn't hide from it, yeah.
That makes me so happy to hear. And I do want to talk about this because the movie, obviously there's a lot of controversy surrounding it and there are a lot of issues and terrible things happening. But at the same time, the movie is filled with so much joy. Like, it's such a joyful movie. There is a sense of tragedy in the romance to some extent. But I found myself, like, from beginning to end, I just had a huge smile on my face because I was so moved by it. And I want to talk a little bit about that because I feel like that's something that gets missed a little bit about this movie. There's so many beautiful little moments, little beats. I remember.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. In the beginning, there was one, I remember the moment where I knew I was going to love the movie. It was such a simple moment, but it's when Mehrab is on the bus trying to get dressed for work and the woman behind him fixes his collar. I love.
So sweet that you say it because that was actually one of our producers when he saw that moment. He was like, then I knew I was going to love the film.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was exactly. You're the second person to say that. Our producer, who's actually the son of Benny Andersson of ABBA, Ludwig Andersson.
Oh, my gosh.
So now you have another ABBA.
Yeah, do not let them listen to this interview. Don't let them hear I didn't like ABBA.
Yeah, don't worry about it.
But there's so many little moments like that. Were those improvised? Were those planted in the script?
A lot of them were like in the moment, actually. I remember she was there and I was like, I told her, like, you should fix his collar. But also I wanted to showcase sort of, I mean, it's adorable in a sense, but it's also very annoying. In Georgia, you have no private space. Like, everybody is in your business all the time. So I, you know, like, if that would happen here, you know, somebody would be like, what are you doing to my collar?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, but there it's just like, oh, she, you know, he's a kid and she's like helping him. But I wanted to make something hopeful, you know, because I wanted to take that bad stuff that happened in the Pride Parade and make something like beautiful and hopeful and earnest. And because it's so easy to be cynical and like sarcastic and ironic. I think so many things are, especially in these times, it's so easy to not show your heart or be vulnerable because, you know, when you show yourself vulnerable, you're open to much more critique, I guess.
Yeah. And,
you know, but so, I mean, for me personally as a director, this is my most like vulnerable project and it's really like really personal to me. And it was quite difficult also in that sense to make the film, but I really wanted to make people smile and just see that, you know, like, love is love and it's the same for everyone.
So Levin the actor, and is it Bocci?
Perfect.
So Levin and Bocci, these guys are incredible, and I didn't want to look too much into it because I wanted to ask you and get your answer. Were they dancers or actors first, because they're so good at both?
I know. So Levin is a dancer, contemporary dancer, first and foremost. He acted a little like when he was a kid because his mom worked in a theater, but he's not like a professional actor.
Are you kidding me?
No.
Wow.
He's just a natural talent. And Bocci is an actor. He worked at the theater and he studied theater. But he danced a little as a kid.
Gotcha. What was it like, the training process to get them both up to that level?
I know. Like, they spent like this summer, like June, July, August before filming, 3 months of like dance rehearsals with this really amazing Georgian dance choreographer who unfortunately had to remain anonymous in the credits because of the sensitivity of the issue.
But
it was really tough on them. And the summers in Georgia are so warm, so they were just like sweating for 3 months. Yeah.
And there's so many, the camera work, I love it so much, and I love the way you capture these dances, and you're shooting so much of this in a dance studio with mirrors everywhere. How difficult was that, and how did you choreograph everything in the camera work, and how long did it take?
You're gonna freak out now because, I mean, we made this film on like a shoestring budget, and I think we filmed like all of the dance scenes, including the final dance, in like 5 days. But we have literally no time.
Oh my god.
Yeah, so it would be like, okay, now we're doing this dance scene, and we're all like so tired when we go home. Like, oh no, we have two more left. Okay.
No. Oh.
Yeah, so it was difficult. I mean, I wanted the camera to be like very like tactile and close to Levin all the time, and you know, just to feel him, but yeah, I mean, we had to, after we finished the film and we got it into Cannes, and we knew that we got a little more money for like post production, so then we could like also erase our DOP from the mirrors in some images.
Gotcha.
She was there. Yeah.
Isn't it digital effects are amazing, man.
They are, actually, yeah. It's so nice. Because you're like, oh, I'll fix that later. If you have money, yeah.
There are a couple other, like, I don't want to spoil anything because the film hasn't technically been released yet, but there are a couple emotionally intense moments. And, I mean, there are plenty of them, but there are two in particular where you decided to capture them in a single take. And one of them is near the film's conclusion during a wedding. And one of them is at around the midpoint with the two characters hanging out outside a tent. And I wonder what was the motivation behind that and capturing those in a single take?
Yeah, with the one toward the end, I actually had written down in my notebook, I don't know if I wanted to do it in this film, I ended up doing it, but I'd written down, you know, when you go to a party and you're like in love with someone and you know that they're going to be there, you have like high expectations and you're hopeful and you know, that's the only person you look for. And then I wrote down like, but then you leave the party and you're heartbroken and everybody else around you is happy and you can't say anything about it, especially if you're gay. You know?
Right.
And I wanted to really convey that feeling. And I wanted to do it in these long takes because I didn't want to cut away from him. I wanted to be with him in that moment all the way. And not lose him. And it was the same with the scene in the middle of the film when they're being intimate, that I wanted it to feel, you know, almost like a memory that you have, you know, when you think about something that was really like, he's probably going to think back to that moment a lot in his life. And, you know, there are no edits in that memory. Yeah.
That worked out so well. And I wanted to ask, which moments are you the most proud of that you got? Like scenes or something where it turned out even better than you expected.
I really like that moment in the middle of the film when they're intimate the first time, because it's so erotic and also real, and I think it's like one of the best intimate moments I've seen between two characters, actually.
I agree.
Yeah, there's something about it that's so real, and but without like being in your face, without feeling embarrassing, you know, it can often it just feels like right.
Yeah.
And then also a scene that I loved filming, which was fun to film, was when they meet the sex workers.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they were working that night, and we just came there. So we really like, I mean, this whole film was like a guerrilla shoot. So
oh, wow.
And I knew them from my research.
So that wasn't in the script at all?
Well, I mean, it was in the script that, like, they're going to meet the sex workers, and they're going to, you know, take some money from them. But not the way it, like, panned out. That was sort of just, like, improvised in the moment.
Gotcha.
When, you know, they're talking about, like, the shit, the razor, and, like,
yeah,
you stole my razor, and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing. And one more question.
Mm-hmm.
I do a podcast. It's called Missing Frames, and we watch all the movies we should have seen by this point in our lives. So what is a movie that you have always wanted to see that you know you need to see, but you still haven't?
A movie that I know that I have to see that I haven't seen. You know what? I haven't seen The Deer Hunter.
The Deer Hunter. I haven't seen that either.
Yeah.
I hear amazing
things. I've seen,
like,
the beginning. I love that. I think it's, like, a big wedding or something in the beginning. But then, no, I haven't seen that. I should see that, I think.
You should. I encourage you to see that. I encourage me to see that as well.
Yeah.
Well, Levin, I want to say I sincerely love this movie. I'm so happy for you.
Thank you so much, Sean.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And
Thank you.
Not only is it a fantastic film, and I think everyone should see it, but I love hearing about the way it's kind of helping to open the doors for these conversations to happen in Georgia. So thank you so much for making it.
Thank you. And I hope to talk to you again soon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, take care.
So there you have it. Thanks again so much for listening. If you like what you're listening to, feel free to give a 5-star rating on iTunes, write a review, and I will read your review on the show in a future episode. And if you want to learn more about When You Can See And Then We Danced, go to musicboxfilms.com, search for the film And Then We Danced, and you can scroll down and find the theatrical engagements drop down, and it'll show you where it's going to be playing. So again, it's opening this weekend in New York City, and then you can also see it in LA next weekend, as well as Chicago, Pasadena, Seattle, and DC. And then it'll continue to expand from there. But again, thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.